All right, good to have you back. This is Maximize Your Influence, Kurt Mortensen here, Podcast 503, as we go into the new psychology of objections. What has changed? What is different? How do we adapt? How do we deal with these objections? How do we even stop them from happening? How do we know when it's just time to shut up and solve the objection, or even if it's a knee-jerk, made-up objection? So how do we handle these? What's different? What's changed? Let's get into it.
Maximize Your Influence. Kurt Mortensen is the author of Persuasion IQ, Laws of Charisma, and the best-selling book, Maximum Influence.
Good to have you back. Tell your family, friends, and enemies about the podcast. We've been found at iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and iHeartRadio under Maximize Your Influence. Or go to MaximizeYourInfluence.com. All the specials, all the articles, your free Persuasion IQ assessment, the freebies, the advanced training, all in one spot. Please let me know at Kurt at MaximizeYourInfluence.com what you want to hear. Send me your emails with your questions. If we use any questions, comments, rude remark, humor, articles on the podcast, you get the free gold version of InfluenceUniversity.com. That's pretty much everything I've done in one spot, all the way from the archives to the library to the 52-week advanced training. So let's get into the persuasion blunder.
Don't.
Now, you've probably heard the story about the boy that cried wolf. Watching the sheep would cry wolf. Everyone would come running. He was the lookout, supposed to cry wolf, kept doing it. And after a while, it was no fun. The town boy wouldn't come. When the wolf finally came and he cried wolf, the town people didn't come because he cried wolf so many times. Well, we see that in persuasion influence. When you use guilt a little too much, shame a little too much, check out the podcast a few weeks ago. We talked about how to use guilt and shame. We use a little too much fear, force, those threats. You're crying wolf too many times. That'll work really well the first time. Pretty good the second time. Not so good the third time. By the 12th time, I'm just making up that number, it's not going to work so well. So this happened to me. I was at the Atlanta airport on a layover. So the emergency stuff was going off, lights were flashing, and nobody cared. There was even a little audio, emergency's been reported in the building, and everyone just going around like nothing ever happened, and nobody cared, nobody did anything, nobody tried to find out what was going on. That's the danger of it happening way too many times. Now, it could have been an emergency. I never saw one, but it's happened so many times before that, yeah, it's probably nothing. Just like an airline pilot, you know, I get it. It's got to announce the turbulence. Most of the time, it's nothing. They're just covering their ends, don't want anybody to get hurt. I get it. But then after a while, people quit putting on their seatbelts because they're tired of hearing it, because every time they hear it, it never amounted to anything. So, wow, what is that balance? Well, you can use it. Fear is a great motivator, a great persuader. The auto mechanics that use the fear, yeah, what if the brakes go out? Or the life insurance, doom and gloom, something bad's going to happen. Medical doctors after 20 times, yep, you're going to be dead before I see you next time, and you're not. You got to balance that. You got to use other forms of motivation, not only use the fear. Again, it's quick, easy, and fast, but it has diminishing returns. We have to be so careful. Now, I'm going to get in trouble for this one, too. If I'm doing a seminar at a hotel, what happens all the time? The stinking fire alarm goes off. And who do they look to? I'm the one in charge. I'm the one speaking. What should we do? Should we evacuate? And I calmly say, no, it's not a real event. It's a false alarm. Let's continue. I don't know. But the last 100 times I've heard it, nothing bad happened. I know I need to be careful. And I did send the staff out to see if anything was going on. I do want to protect the people. But really, when it's happened 100 times, and I don't know what the exact number there, but it's happened a lot to where even if I'm in my room and it goes off, I'm not evacuating. Until I'm feeling heat or flames or seeing fire trucks, I'm not evacuating. And that's dangerous. That's bad. What if it's a real thing? Just be so careful. Strategically use it. It can be a good persuader. Some people are uninspirable. But once you've done it too many times, you've cried wolf too many times, it can backfire on you. Just saying, just putting it out there. With that, bringing us to our geeky, scholarly article. This is a fun one. Selling kids on veggies when the rules like clean your plate fail. This is from Harvard School of Public Health and Yale University. I laugh because I use this example in seminars as far as, you know, the 4 to 5 persuasion tools most people have, and they use it trying to get their kids to eat vegetables, right? They try to be nice. They try to data dump. They use their authority as a parent. Try to bribe them with ice cream, then they yell at them. So even if you have the rule, everything must clean your plate. I remember being a kid. I hated vegetables, and I hated salad. I hated vegetables. Still hate eggplant. Still wouldn't order Brussels sprouts at a restaurant. But you get the, you know, I hate vegetables. I already took a bite. And, you know, as parents, you're the authority figure. I mean, if you let children, they probably only eat sugar if you let them. So, I mean, vegetables are good for you. You got the vitamins, the antioxidants, and all the good things there. So let's take a look at the study here. 25% of families tell their children to eat everything on their plate. 45% report setting restrictions on the type of foods eaten. And they said increasingly common are rules like clean your plate and restrictions like no second helping of certain things like potatoes, no dessert until you eat your vegetables, only sodas and chips on special occasions. And it's hard because as parents, you're putting their best interests first, but they still resist you. We see that with managers and leaders too. You're trying to help them out. You're trying to help them become better people. They go into that by demanding that children eat things like vegetables before they have dessert. It makes it seem like there's something wrong with eating vegetables. Some studies have shown us that when we are put in a situation where somebody is saying finish this or finish that, the kids actually have more negative responses and actually consumed less of the food than the kids who didn't have that reinforcement you need to finish. So it looks like we got to be careful what we're forcing, what we want, what we're doing. I mean, you're getting the short-term results, but it looks like long-term there's negative responses and the kids are eating as many vegetables as they should. So they say the better option is creative negotiation. They talk about try it on Tuesdays. So on Tuesday, parents, along with your kids, pick out a new food to sample. And it says it helps to involve the kids in preparing the dish. This investment in the new food increases the likelihood that children will try it and even enjoy it. There's the one of the 12 laws of persuasion, the law of involvement. Engage their opinion. What are your thoughts? What should we try? What do you do? Let's get them involved cooking it. That's true with any aspect of persuasion. People are more willing to try it, like it, and do it. So that was the best option. Try it on Tuesdays. It would get them involved. Not just doing what we all heard. Well, you have to. I'm the parent because I said so. When you get the why? Or you get the, my brother-in-law used to stuff it in the little hole in the seat he would sit in. There's the old napkin, you know, spit it out in your napkin. Or the dog on the floor to eat the vegetables. Although it does with some dogs, even they won't eat some of the vegetables. She says, as it turns out, as with most behaviors, your kids are watching you. He says, I had a parent come to the clinic not too long ago and said, okay, what's your goal for being here today? And he looked at me and said, make him eat his vegetables. And my question back was, do you eat your vegetables? He says, no, I don't like them. We've talked about being genuine, authentic, congruent. I don't think there's any parent that should say, eat your spinach, but they're not willing to do it themselves. So there we have the scholarly article of the week. Let's go to listener email.
Oh, boy.
This is Rudra from India. He says, hey, Kurt, can you review how to overcome objection? What's changed? What's different? What is the formula you've created to overcome objections? Well, let's talk about some new stuff with this. Let's go into some basics and get you some new research information on this. I mean, the first thing you think about is when things are done right, close is easy. There are not that many objections, if any, but there's going to be questions. There are going to be objections. Don't take it personally. You've got to figure out if this is a real objection or knee-jerk objection. Because when you solve the wrong objection or that knee-jerk objection, you're like, well, what is that? Well, when someone says, I need to think about it. All right, is that real? Most of the time it's not. It's too expensive. Most of the time it's not real. You just have to ask more clarifying questions. Well, I need to think about it. What exactly do you think about? Well, everything. All right, knee-jerk, they're just getting rid of you. But if they tell you exactly what it is, well, I need to talk to my partner. What do you need to talk to them about? Well, everything. Knee-jerk. Well, I'm not sure that the warranty is going to fit our needs. Now you know exactly what it is. So don't just launch and solve the objection. Find out if it's really true. Dig a little deeper. Peel that onion back. And don't get offended. This is good. This is part of the game. You should love objections. That means they're listening. there's no questions, no objections, that means they're not listening. They don't care. So don't get offended. Especially like, well, I talked about that. If you would have listened. Before we get into the new part of this, realize that there's really two categories of objections. Most people think it's logical. Remember, we're emotional creatures, that most persuasion influences on the emotional level. But there's two pieces. Logical, meaning the numbers have to work. The logic has to be there. So logical would be financial concerns. Maybe that's too expensive. It's not in their budget right now. Maybe they need to wait till next quarter. Maybe they don't see the return on investment. The logic could also be functional concerns. Does this work? Does it solve my problem? It's really not a fire right now. We can fix this tomorrow. We can wait another day. Well, I don't have the time right now to deal with this. I don't have the bandwidth. I don't have the support from the other people around me. Those are logical concerns that you can address. The ones we forget about, the emotional side, those subconscious triggers. It just doesn't feel right. Now, remember those triggers. Go back to the archives if you need to. Could be color, smell, gestures, words you're using, tone of voice. Do you have facial hair? Can they see your eyes? Are they in a bad mood? Are you in a bad mood? Temperature of the room, round table, square table, color, ceiling height, all those things come into play. That's one of those crazy things about persuasion influence that's really opened my eyes over the years, is that up to 95% of influence involves these subconscious triggers. So maybe there's something there that just didn't feel right to them. Fear of failure could be part of that too. What if I look dumb? What if it doesn't work out? What if they take advantage of me? Or they don't feel like they're motivated enough to do it themselves. I mean, weight loss, for example, that's a big one. You've tried other ones before and failed, and so you don't believe in yourself that it's going to happen. Even though everything looks good, you just don't believe in yourself to actually do it. So what I would do before we get into the new stuff, is it a real objection or knee-jerk? If it's knee-jerk, you don't need to solve it, just move on. Nothing's worse than solving the wrong objection. Is this more of an emotional thing you need to address or a logical thing? And then just kind of go through my formula, my steps. All right, when that objection comes up, first thing you got to do is, can you solve it? Sometimes you can't and you just have to move on. Suppose you're negotiating maybe a large office furniture order and the objection comes up about not being able to afford it, and you find out that their company just declared bankruptcy. You know, really nothing you do or say is going to resolve that objection. So you're just going to move on. Don't waste your time. Is this something you can even solve? Even maybe if it's one of their deep-rooted fears, is it something you can solve? I mean, there are ways to do that, but is it so entrenched, is it even worth your time to do that? And when they state that objection, you got to hear them out, completely with interruption. That's a huge complaint. That's when people cross the line from confidence to arrogance, because they've heard them so many times, they just cut people off and solve them. First time they voiced it, hear them out completely, pause, don't interrupt. They're not going to listen to you until they know that you've listened to them. And then just don't take that at face value, because sometimes it's just not clear to you or even clear to them in their mind. Always ask a prospect to restate or repeat key points and take it on yourself. Don't say, I don't understand. I don't get it. You're like, you know, mate, let me sure I got this right. Is you can restate it, have them restate it, make sure I got this right. I want to make sure I'm serving you the best way possible. Because every time they restate it or replay the objection, it becomes clear in both your minds. Let them speak, especially if they're upset. It drains the emotion and it allows them to voice their concerns, to feel heard, that you're not a one size fits all. And it helps you determine their intent. And one we rarely see, it's from the law of esteem. Always compliment your prospect on their objection. Appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks for asking that. Thanks for bringing it up. Because it dictates the direction you're going to take the presentation. It keeps the door open for them to ask more questions and objection because you're appreciating it. You don't have to prove that you're right 100% of the time. Just say thank you for bringing that out. I apologize for not answering that earlier. Take it on yourself. Own it. And then find some point of agreement. And stay calm. Like I mentioned before, scientific tests have proven that calmly stated facts are more effective in getting people to change their minds than threats and force. You shouldn't be bruising your esteem. You shouldn't be taking it personally. This is a good thing. And I know you don't think you're doing this, but avoid arrogance or being condescending. Show empathy for their objection. Let them know others have felt this way. They're not the only ones. You can talk in the third person. Use a disinterested party to prove your point. That's why we use testimonials. let someone else do the persuading for you. And give them room to save face. People often change their minds and agree with you later. Leave the door open for them to agree with you. You don't have to back them in the corner. We already talked about this. Well, that's a dumb question. That's not true. Maybe they didn't have all the facts. Maybe it was a knee jerk. Maybe they misunderstood. But don't back them into a corner. So rules. Love it. This is good. That means they're listening. Use your listening skills. We know that great persuaders are great listeners. They ask more questions. You're peeling that onion back, finding what's really going on. You're empathizing. They feel understood and that you genuinely care about them and understand them. But we have to back up and talk about some of these changes. Remember, trust is an all-time low. So this just might be a trust issue. Did you build the trust? The challenge is your default settings. You tend to persuade others how you like to be persuaded. You tend to sell how you like to be sold. Adapt to them. Some people like to banter, kind of fight it out a little bit. Not the fight type of way, but, you know, a good, healthy debate. They love to do it. Some don't. So adapt to how they like their questions answered. Realize that they've all had a school teacher that made them feel dumb when they asked a question. Do not let that happen. But here's the shift. Great persuaders solve objections before they even happen. If you've done your presentation right, you pre-solve the objection so it's not even coming up. So if you're getting the same objection over and over again, you need to add something in your presentation that solves it before it comes up. If someone has an objection, it's like their brain hits a brick wall. They don't hear any benefit, any feature, anything else because they're stuck on this question, objection they want to answer, they want to get out. It's how the brain works. So just like inoculation in the medical field, you can go to the archives if you want to know more about this in a persuasion setting. But basically, you're pre-solving the objections before they happen. You're giving them antibodies for what maybe their Aunt Edna or neighbor or manager will say. So how do you pre-solve it? What are some ways to do this? Here's the big shift. First one, if you're getting the same objections over and over and over again, you need more social validation. That's another one of the laws of persuasion. So sharing testimonials, case studies, examples of satisfied customers who had the same objections, but they tried it, they did it, they are happier than ever, they're more wealthier than ever, healthier than ever, whatever it is. So you show an evidence of others who have been successful with your product or service. And that alleviates those concerns, it builds trust, and could be a great way to do that. So that same objection is coming up again and again. One way is put in a little proof, testimonial, endorsement. It's usually going to be a success story or case study or testimonial. Heck, when infomercials fail, which most of them do, what's the first thing they do? They put in more testimonials of people making it work, making it happen, seeing success. Another one, they probably haven't accepted you as the expert because when you're the expert, there's very few objections. I mean, really, you're the expert. Why would I have an objection or question? You're the best at what you do. Be the expert. How do you do that? Well, do your research on them and their company. Know what you're talking about. Know your industry. Know your company's strengths and weaknesses. And teach them something new. Somewhere in that presentation, usually hopefully the beginning, you got to teach them something new, unique, a new study, a new thought, a new insight to prove that you are the expert. When the expert, objections go down. And you should bring up whatever that objection is. Bring up the study or whatever refutes their objection, their question. Again, study, expert witness, a new thought, a new insight, something they haven't thought about is going to dramatically reduce those objections before they even happen. And final one, we've always hit this one hard, solve it with a story. I mean, it's similar to success stories, but it could be a personal story. It could even be a fable or a borrowed story or just an analogy, an example, a metaphor, a simile. Something that just rings true you can use to pre-solve your objection. So that could work out too. It could be a success story along with the social validation, but it might be something completely different. Your personal account, while your company came to be, the story of someone who didn't implement it, the story of somebody did, can be a very powerful tool. So have fun with this. Learn to love them. It's a game. When you hear the objection, game on. Let's go. Let's do this. It's fun. They're listening. And then start pre-solving the objections you get over and over again so they don't even come up and their brains don't need to hit a brick wall. I'd also recommend, especially if you're persuading and selling with other people, come up with an objection book. Well, you know, start with the top 10 objections, come with 3-4 great responses, work with each other, adapt with each other, can be a very powerful thing. Thanks for being here. Really appreciate your comments, your love, support. Links will be under the podcast, either in your email or at maximizeyourinfluence.com under podcast 503. And there you can find this special to influenceuniversity.com. Again, everything, one spot, all the book audios, videos. Usually it's an annual or monthly membership, but now you can get a whole year for 65% off. And I will gift you into a lifetime membership. You invest once, and it's good for a lifetime. Check it out. There's also a free version at influenceuniversity.com. But love objections. Become a student of influence. Become a power negotiator. Learn to motivate others on command. And go out and persuade with power.